number SCWC 29799, State v. Foster. Arguing for the petitioner, Cynthia Kagiwada. Arguing for the respondent, Richard Minatoya. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. Are you both ready to proceed? And Ms. Kagiwada, you're going to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, is that right?
Correct.
So we'll have a light come on with a 10-minute warning for you. Mr. Minatoya, we're going to give you a warning with 5 minutes to go in your argument. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, very well. Please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Cynthia Kagiwada. I'm appearing on behalf of petitioner Raymond Foster. And the issue before the court today really has to do with whether the state presented sufficient evidence for Mr. Foster's conviction of prohibited possession of firearm and ammunition. And really the only issue that the court needs to consider today is whether there was sufficient evidence of constructive possession. And with regard to that issue, the main thing that the court will have to consider is how Mr. Foster's status as an owner or driver of the vehicle factored into whether or not he constructively possessed the firearm and the ammunition found in his vehicle. Because this is a sufficiency of the evidence case, I just wanted to briefly summarize the facts of the case. This case arose out of an event that occurred in the early morning hours around 2 o'clock or so in a remote area of Maui. And the evidence is not in dispute in this case. Earlier in the evening, Mr. Foster had picked up Mr. Milano. And when he picked Mr. Milano up, Mr. Milano had a black ukulele case. He also picked up two other passengers, Malia Saunders and Wendy Gonzalez.
You know, Ms. Kagiwara, I have a question, and it's not really cleared up on the record. How can a rifle fit in a ukulele case?
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense to me either. I wonder if that was really a guitar case rather than it wasn't apparent from the record.
It wasn't sawed off. There's no evidence it was sawed off.
There was no evidence that it was sawed off.
Okay. I was just wondering because it
It doesn't seem to make any sense either, but throughout the testimony, everybody referred to it as a ukulele case rather than other kind of case. But yes, I was puzzled by that as well. And so the four of them went driving out to a remote area of Maui. There was testimony that while they were driving out there, Mr. Milano at one point pulled out the rifle and with Ms. Gonzalez's help was loading the ammunition. At some point out in the remote area of Maui, Mr. Milano got out of the car, took the rifle and fired off several shots. I believe it was probably about 11 shots. Then they got back into the car, they continued driving. And at that point they encountered some law enforcement officers from the Department of Land and Natural Resources who were out looking for possible night hunting. They made a stop on the car. They approached the car, and as they approached the car, they heard, one of the officers heard the sound of a click that sounded like a rifle. When they approached the car, they found that Mr. Foster was the driver. Mr. Milano was sitting in the front passenger seat. Ms. Saunders was right behind Mr. Milano, and Ms. Gonzalez was behind Mr. Foster. When the officers looked into the car, they saw a banana clip of ammunition on the center console between Mr. Foster and Mr. Milano. They proceeded to have everybody exit the car. When they went to have the back passengers get out of the car, one of the officers moved the seat forward, and at that point, they saw a rifle behind the seat where Mr. Milano was sitting. Then during the course of the investigation, Mr. Foster did talk to one of the officers. Mr. Foster told the officers what had happened that night. He also, accordingly, never said that he was afraid of Mr. Milano or felt threatened by Mr. Milano. And so that was kind of the evidence that came in at trial. And additionally, Ms. Gonzalez and Ms. Saunders were called as possible defense witnesses, but they asserted their Fifth Amendment privileges and did not testify. But Mr. Foster was able to introduce partial statements that they made to law enforcement. Ms. Gonzalez essentially said they went riding out in the remote area of Maui and that Mr. Milano at some point pulled out a rifle and she helped him to load the rifle. He got out of the car and shot off some, I believe they said he made some shots at a derelict car or something, got back into the car and proceeded on their way.
Wasn't her statement that they loaded, stopped at one point, loaded the rifle, started driving again, then stopped, and then he got out?
I'm not sure that she actually stated that they stopped. I would have to check on that, Your Honor. I believe that if you would just give me just a minute, I can find that in the record.
At some point we stop. I see Philip load 14 bullets into the clip gun magazine. I remember because Philip and I were counting the bullets, I was interested in the gun. Philip was loading and reloading the clip. We drove some more, and Philip got out of the car and began shooting at the car. So.
Oh, yes, I guess that was her testimony then, that they stopped. And then Ms. Saunders also testified that she was going along for the ride. When they were stopped by the law enforcement, Mr. Milano threw the rifle in the backseat of the car, and it landed on her and Ms. Gonzalez's laps, and then they kicked it to the floor. But neither Ms. Saunders or Ms. Gonzalez testified at all, or in their statements actually, stated that Mr. Foster handled the gun or tried to handle the gun or made any attempt to touch or handle it in any way. So those were kind of the facts, the evidence that was before the jury. And the jury convicted Mr. Foster on both of these counts. However, it was not without some problems. After they had been deliberating for a while, they did send out a communication specifically asking the court about possession. They asked, does there have to be a showing that Mr. Foster had some kind of contact or use with the firearm or the or intent to use the firearm or the ammunition? And the court just referred them back to the jury instruction number 25 on possession. And they got that instruction back at about 9:55 in the morning. They deliberated some more, and they returned a verdict later that afternoon at 2:15. So subsequent to that, Mr. Foster's attorney filed a motion for judgment of acquittal. There was a hearing on that motion, and after hearing argument from both sides, Judge August granted that motion. And he specifically found that Mr. Foster, although he had the power and the ability to exercise dominion and control over the firearm and the ammunition, he did not have the intent to exercise dominion and control. And that is indeed the state of the law in Hawaii for constructive possession. There has to be some kind of nexus shown between Mr. Foster and the firearm and ammunition. And there has to be both the power and the intention to exercise dominion and control over the firearm and the ammunition. And that's where I believe the state's evidence fell short, was on the intention portion of that component. Now, in vacating the circuit court's order, the ICA relied on six factors. The ICA first determined that Foster had knowledge that the rifle and the ammunition were in proximity to him in the vehicle. Knowledge alone is not enough to show both power and intention. The court also found that the ammunition clip was in easy reach because it was on the front seat. Again, the case law in this jurisdiction has stated that mere proximity to contraband is not sufficient. And then the other factors that the court relied on were that Foster willingly and intentionally allowed Mr. Milano to re-enter the vehicle with the rifle and ammunition, knowing he was carrying a working rifle and ammunition, and that as the driver and the owner of the vehicle, he had ultimate control over who and what was allowed into his vehicle, and that Foster could have refused to let Milano back into the vehicle with the rifle and the ammunition. And finally, that Foster never told the police that he was fearful or threatened by Milano in any way. These last four factors that the ICA depended on all have to do with Mr. Foster's status as a driver or an owner. And there is no law in this jurisdiction that I am aware of that says just because you're a driver or an owner, that makes you in constructive possession of everything in your vehicle.
Ms. Kagiwara, wasn't the state's argument at trial to the jury that there was sufficient evidence to support the inference that this was a joint venture, that they, Mr. Milano and Mr. Foster had gotten in the car and headed out to the country, picked up these two women with the intention of shooting off a gun, getting high and shooting off a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And if indeed there's enough evidence in the record to support that inference, In your view, would that be sufficient to support an inference that Mr. Foster was exercising dominion and control over that weapon? Because as part of their joint venture, agreed upon plan, course of action, what they intended to do that evening included the two of them going out with a gun and shooting it off in the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, you know, to the extent that the state originally tried to suggest that Mr. Foster was an accomplice to Mr. Milano.
I'm not suggesting that. Okay. I think this is they abandoned the accomplice theory.
Yes, they did.
I guess my question to you is, do you think if the evidence suggested or there was enough evidence for the jury to conclude that that the plan for that evening was that the two of them would go out to the country with a gun and shoot the gun off, would that be a sufficient nexus between Mr. Foster and the gun to indicate that he had the intent to exercise dominion and control?
It could be in certain situations, but in this situation, there was no evidence of a joint venture to go and shoot off the firearm. All of the evidence was that Mr. Milano was the only one who brought the rifle into the vehicle and the ammunition. There was no evidence that Mr. Foster had a joint venture with him. Now, under different circumstances, such as the Brown case that the state relies on very heavily, there could be that kind of circumstance where the two people were involved in a joint venture, and then, yes, in that circumstance, the defendant could be held responsible for.
Doesn't the evidence support the inference that the two of them were friends, Mr. Milano and Mr. Foster?
But that's not sufficient for showing that there was some kind of joint criminal activity.
Well, piece by piece.
Okay.
Were they friends? Is it a fair inference from the fact that apparently Mr. Milano shared with Mr. Foster the fact that he was being sought by police?
Yes, Mr. Foster did make a statement to law enforcement to that effect.
Okay, and then what about the circumstances of this event where apparently the weapon was being handled or out in the car for more than just a brief moment before it was shot, but actually apparently was being, you know, loaded, unloaded, people are talking about the number of bullets, that's going on for a while. Doesn't that sort of support the sense, the inference that this was sort of a planned venture as opposed to something that took Mr. Foster completely by surprise?
Well, that would go to show that Mr. Foster had knowledge of what was going on, but knowledge alone is not sufficient.
Well, couldn't it support the inference that when he went and picked up his friend who came in to the car with, an ukulele or a guitar case, that it was understood at that point, or there's a fair inference that at that point the intent was to go pick up these two women and go out and smoke some ice and marijuana in a very remote area of the island and shoot?
If there was some kind of evidence that Mr. Foster had stated that, or that some other kind of evidence that isn't present in the case, then yes, that could be the case. But in this case, there's absolutely nothing that showed that that was the plan.
How about where they were when this happened? Is there any evidence as to why they were out in this very remote part of the Maui at 2 in the morning?
Well, the evidence from, I believe it was from both one of the women passengers and from Mr. Foster's, that they intended to go out there to go cruising.
Okay.
There was no evidence that they stated they were going out there to shoot off a firearm.
Why in that very remote area? Is there something in the evidence that could support the inference that they were going there to shoot? I mean, wouldn't that remoteness perhaps support that inference?
It could also support the inference that, well, I guess it possibly could, but I would believe that you still need something more to tie that to Mr. Foster being part of a plan. And there was absolutely nothing to show that he was part of a plan to use this firearm.
Wasn't the evidence that the DLNR officers were actually out there because of problems with deer hunting in the middle of the night?
Yes, yes.
And that's why they were actually pulled over, right?
Yes, that's true.
If you look at the Hawaii Penal Code, I know Jenkins throws some question on the definition of possession. But possession means you either had to procure it. And was there any evidence that Mr. Foster procured the rifle?
No, there was none.
Or evidence that you received it? Was there any evidence that Mr. Foster received it?
No, there was none.
Or that you had possession of the article for a sufficient time to dispose of it. Is there any evidence of that?
No, there was none.
The ICA seems to make the argument that in some way Mr. Foster was responsible, because he could have excluded Milano from the vehicle and then absolved himself of being charged with possession. And how do you respond to that?
Yes, well, that's where I believe that the ICA is relying upon Mr. Foster's status as the driver or owner of the vehicle. In fact, they stated that because as the driver and the owner of the vehicle, he had ultimate control over who and what was allowed into his vehicle. I believe the
ICA... Does that make him responsible for Manolo's actions?
Well, I believe that's what the ICA is.
I mean, the logical inference is if you have the right to exclude someone, the underlying assumption is that you have the right to do that because you're in some way responsible for the actions of that person.
Well, I think that is taking things too far, and there are cases from other jurisdictions with similar situations like this where the driver had nothing to do with the contraband that was being brought into the vehicle.
So is the ICA promoting a theory of vicarious liability?
That is,
if there's someone in your vehicle that does something wrong, you're responsible for that person's actions.
Yes, and I believe that goes too far. I believe Mr. Foster's status as the driver or the owner is a factor, but I don't think it should be the decisive
factor. Vicarious liability is based on the fact that you didn't do any act and you didn't have any intent.
Right.
But you're responsible for somebody's act
right.
and their intent.
Right, and I believe that goes too far. Other jurisdictions have said the fact that somebody is a driver or an owner doesn't make them responsible for everything.
Can I follow up on that question? If when Mr. Foster picked up Mr. Milano was openly carrying the rifle when he got in the car, would this case be any different?
That would be another factor that I think would have to be considered by the jury in terms of does that show anything different? But again, if Mr. Foster had nothing to do with the firearm.
How is dominion defined?
How is dominion defined?
Yes, do you have a definition for dominion?
I do not have a definition. There was not a specific definition given to the jury, so my understanding is that it has the regular dictionary meaning. But I think the more problematic part was whether or not there was, Mr. Foster had the intent of any kind to have anything to do with the firearm.
Ms. Kagiwara, I have a question.
Yes.
Assuming the state of the evidence, namely that there was the DNL officers who testified about the facts and circumstances and the situation of the area, couldn't the reasonable juror also conclude that perhaps Mr. Foster and Mr. Milano were present for the purposes of actually doing deer hunting? It may sound far-fetched, but that's the... Wouldn't that be also a reasonable inference? That they both went, the four of them went there for the purposes of actually doing deer hunting? Because there was some evidence of the fact that what drew their attention was this highlighting of the area.
Right.
Which is consistent with deer hunting.
Right. Although they never found any evidence in the vehicle when they searched it of...
I know, but given the state of the evidence, couldn't a reasonable juror conclude that?
Well, there still has to be some kind of nexus shown between Mr. Foster and the firearm and the ammunition. And the fact that they were out in a remote area of Maui, they could have been there for a number of reasons.
No, I understand. They could have been there to take drugs. They could have been there to shoot the gun. Right. They could have been there to go hunting.
Right.
So
right.
If the reasonable juror concluded that they were there to go hunting, wouldn't the reasonable juror could conclude that they went there for that joint effort to go and hunt deer?
I do not believe that there was any evidence that they were there for deer hunting. So for the jury to make that conclusion, I think would have been an improper inference.
So you're suggesting that the juror should have disregarded the DNL officers who described the area, the location, the time, the circumstances, which is consistent with deer hunting?
No, I'm not saying that they had to disregard what the law enforcement officers were stating, but there still has to be some kind of connection shown between Mr. Foster.
Where was the closest deer in this case?
Pardon?
Where was the closest deer in this case?
There was no evidence of any deer. The only evidence of the suspected deer hunting was that the law enforcement officer saw lights panning back and forth in a way that they thought deer hunters used. But when they stopped Mr. Foster's vehicle, there were no deer in the car. There was no evidence of any kind that they were involved in deer hunting. In fact, the evidence was that they went out there and Mr. Milano got out of the car and shot off the rifle at a derelict car or boat, got back into the car and proceeded.
Wasn't the shooting at some harbor? I don't know Maui, but or near some harbor?
I'm not exactly sure. I believe it was pretty much in a remote area where there's not much out there. And some of the witnesses described the thing that Mr. Milano shot at as a derelict car. But later, when the next day when law enforcement went out there, they actually saw that it was a boat, you know, a derelict boat, I think they described it as. But I'm not exactly sure, Your Honor, where it was, other than in a remote part of Maui. Are there any further questions at this time? Otherwise, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kagiwara. Mr. Minatoya.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the court, Richard Minatoya, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, County of Maui, for the respondent, State of Hawaii. I'm going over some of the arguments by opposing counsel. The
Mr.
question.
Minatoya, why don't
yes.
we just get right to Ms. Kagiwara's major point? What is the evidence of intent? You yourself quote Brown and other cases that state your proximity is not enough.
That's correct, Your Honor. Well, in this case, it would be the inference drawn from the testimony or the statements by the two females in the vehicle, as well as his own statement. It basically what it comes down to is when the ukulele case was opened up and the rifle, and I believe it was a MAC-10, which is I guess between a rifle and a handgun, so it's probably could fit in a ukulele
case.
Was
there any evidence that that's the type of rifle used for deer hunting?
No, not to my knowledge. In any event, was brought out, was loaded, then was shot. So basically, the knowledge is of that the defendant or the petitioner would have was that there is a firearm and the firearm works and it is in his vehicle. At that point, as the registered owner and driver of the vehicle, he has, as the ICA says, control over what enters and remains in his vehicle.
That shows intent, power and intent to exercise dominion and control.
Well, the fact of the matter, well, that also includes the fact that the ammo, the magazine was actually located between him and the passenger on the front seat. In the totality of all of this, you know, it's our position that a reasonable jury could make the inference that, you know, with all of this knowledge, the proximity of not just the weapon but also the ammunition, that the jurors could make an inference as to the intent of the petitioner to exercise dominion control over the firearm and ammunition.
In what way? I mean, you're suggesting that they could conclude that he had been handling it, he was going to handle it, were doing this together and that's enough? What would be
doing it?
Can you argue in a tangible way that the jury could find intent?
Doing it together, continuing on their trip with the firearm loaded, again, the testimony that it was in an area where night hunting occurs, or illegal night hunting occurs, that there was actually testimony by the DLNR officers saying that they saw the light sweeping back and forth. Yes, it probably may not be a rifle or a firearm that's used commonly for deer hunting, but, for instance, maybe they could have tried to use it for deer hunting, particularly with the fact that, as testified, the lights startle the deer freeze up, and they're actually easier targets.
Mr. Minatoya, the witnesses stated that they were going to go out there to do drugs, right?
That's correct.
And were drugs found in the car?
Yes.
Okay. And the DNR said they went out there to look for deer hunters.
Yes.
Was there any evidence of deer hunting equipment, racks, anything that they would use to, or any evidence of lights that can scan back and forth?
To my knowledge, there were no lights found. And so I guess one could question whether they were actually light sweeping back and forth, or was
what
just
kind of
vehicle
was this?
It was a 4Runner, so which is would be like a SUV, sport utility vehicle. So, you know, theoretically that could, you know, also be used for hunting because there would be a cargo area in the back.
Was there any evidence of any towels or mats or plastic material in the trunk?
I don't believe so.
The other Minatoya, the definition of possession says you possess the item for which you're charged with. Is there any evidence here that Mr. Foster actually possessed the item?
No, there's no actual possession. That's why we're relying on the theory of constructive possession.
And so you're saying that the fact that he was present or in proximity to these items, that he had knowledge of them and that he was associated with these people, those three things would indicate constructive possession?
Well, also being the owner, registered owner and driver of the vehicle, as well as the fact that he knows the firearm works. It was shot when it was brought out.
Any of that indicate he was exercising dominion and control over the rifle and the ammunition?
Well, again, that comes back to whether an inference can be made. And, you know, obviously the jurors reach that inference. Looking at all of these factors put together in the totality of the circumstances and the state of the evidence, you know, the jury did reach that conclusion.
Mr. Manalo pleaded guilty and confessed to possession of the rifle and ammunition, correct?
Yes.
So is that one factor to factor into who had possession and who exercised dominion and control over the rifle and the ammunition?
That's correct. But the question is whether or not Mr. Foster had constructive.
So this thing about a joint venture and people agreeing, well, let's go out, cruise, and shoot the gun off. That's conspiracy.
I guess it could be looked at in that
you
fashion.
Folks pled conspiracy. I don't know if you did, but did
no.
you?
I don't believe so.
Plead aiding and abetting?
No. I don't, could he plead aiding
did
and
did you folks plead that? That he was an aider and abetter or a conspirator?
I believe the initial theory was that he was...
Did you plead it?
No. It was just the actual possession. And Your Honor, with regard to your question about, you know, vicarious liability, it happens in other cases. For example, if somebody comes into a vehicle with drugs and the driver knows the drugs are there and is being transported to conduct the sale and he agrees to take the person on the sale, that could subject them to liability as well. Likewise, in this case, these guys have a firearm, it's loaded, driving around.
You have that kind of evidence here? He agreed to take part in the shooting or the sale?
We come back to the fact that he was aware that the firearm was there, he was aware that it works, he was aware that it was in his vehicle, and he continues on.
Yeah, but you're deviating from what you just told us, because you told us it's similar to like a drug case where the person knows that the person's carrying the drugs and transporting them to conduct the transaction.
That's correct.
That's why Justice Acoba, in following up in his questions, there is no evidence of this other than the fact that the gun was present.
Well, he knows that the gun is present in his vehicle, and they continue on.
Well, weren't they heading back?
Well,
they're heading around
the island to come back to that south side of the island.
Mr. Minotauri, I'm looking at the indictment, and it charged, both defendants were charged in the same indictment, and charged them as principals and or accomplices.
I'm sorry, yes, I misspoke.
What was the accomplice theory in this case? Can you articulate it?
If I'm not mistaken, it had to do with helping Mr. Milano with the possession of the firearm by not having him leave the vehicle, I guess, would be the theory. And probably because of that confusion, that theory was disregarded.
Were there instructions given on accomplice liability?
I don't believe so. I think it was just that constructive possession instruction, that number 25, I believe it was.
You're familiar with Caruso?
I looked at it, Your Honor,
and cited that.
And it you know, it was our position that it's similar in a sense that it was in the vehicle and the defendant was the driver of the vehicle. And, you know, and that's the Ninth Circuit case, so that is this circuit.
And with Creel, familiar with Creel?
No, I'm not, Your Honor.
So, but even those federal circuits go even a little further. They say that, you know, the fact that you own the vehicle or driving the vehicle can be used as evidence of constructive possession. But then they say, but where there's countervailing evidence, if actually someone else had possession of it, then that weighs more heavily, and so they won't find the person guilty of possession.
That's correct.
All you have here basically that he's the driver, he could have excluded Milano from bringing the rifle back into the car or getting back into the car?
Basically that, along with the fact that it was fired, it was, you know, I mean, they know it works, they continue on. You know, whether or not they're actually doing this activity of night hunting or not, you know, the testimony of the officers, the fact that the officer actually hears or believes he hears the action of a firearm when the vehicle is stopped. I mean, all of those things put together.
But that's from the passenger side, where Mr. Manalo was sitting.
The sound of the...
Right.
That's correct. But it's still, I mean, in the vehicle with him as the driver and the registered owner, knowing that he is a felon. I mean, he has a felony conviction.
What evidence showed that Mr. Foster knew that he was a felon? I noticed no one challenged the... Judge August's findings on page 13, items 11, 12. What evidence is there that he knew, Mr. Foster knew, that Mr. Manalo was a felon, other than the fact that...
No, I'm talking about he himself, Mr. Foster.
Yeah, what evidence showed that Mr. Foster knew?
That he himself was a felon?
No. That Mr. Foster was a felon?
Yeah.
Mr. Foster was a felon.
So, given that, I mean, it is our position that the constructive possession question could be determined by the jury with the evidence that was presented to them. And, you know, obviously the court, in the initial motion for judgment of acquittal after the state closed, believe that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to consider it. So, given those factors, we believe that there was sufficient evidence for the jury to infer that constructive possession did take place by Mr. Foster. And if there are no further questions, that's all the state has to present to you.
Thank you, Mr. Minutoli.
Thank you.
Ms. Kagiwara, your rebuttal.
Ms. Kagiwara, is there a problem if the judge allowed the question to go to the jury and then reconsidered after the jury came back with its guilty verdict?
Well, Rule 29 allows for that. Rule 29 allows for both a motion for judgment of acquittal pre-verdict and post-verdict. And the fact...
I understand that.
Yes.
Is that a problem? I mean, is that odd? Why would the judge allow it to go to a jury and then overturn it after a jury comes back?
Well, I think the first motion, the pre-verdict motion, Judge August did not really focus on the intention portion. He followed the state's argument, which was that Mr. Foster knew about the firearm and the ammunition. There was no discussion when he denied Mr. Foster's first motion about intent or intention. In the second motion for judgment of acquittal post-verdict, that was the entire focus, was on whether or not there was sufficient intent and whether there was a nexus. So,
could the judge have considered the evidence that came in after the state's case in determining whether the second motion for judgment of acquittal should have been granted or should be granted?
Yes, Your Honor. And the evidence that came in afterwards was the evidence, the statements from Ms. Saunders and Ms. Gonzalez, which further strengthened
Did the judgment against Mr. Manalo indicating that he confessed to possession come in?
Yes, that's true as
well. When did it come in?
That came in the defense case as well. So those are the three pieces of evidence that came in for the defense. Mr. Milano's conviction for the same offense, Ms. Saunders' partial statement, and Ms. Gonzalez's partial statement. I did want to address quickly Justice McKenna's questions about the accomplice theory. First of all, this was an original theory by the state, but the state essentially dropped it by the time the case went to the jury, and they never raised it in their opening brief, so I believe that theory has been waived. But the reason that it was dropped, I believe, is there was no showing that Mr. Foster knew that Mr. Milano was a felon. Judge August, in all of his considerations and rulings, including the last motion for judgment of acquittal, I think to be thorough, addressed that accomplice theory, and that was the reason that he found that the state could not survive on that issue, was because there was no evidence that Mr. Foster knew Mr. Milano was a felon.
Ms. Kagiwara, we talked earlier about the statement that Ms. Gonzalez said where they were loaded the weapon, counted the ammunition, drove for a while, stopped, got out, then shot. So a sequence of events involving loading, driving, stopping, and shooting. You recall we talked about that part of the thing.
Yes.
When Mr. Foster was questioned by the officers at the scene, did he give that same account or did his account differ?
I would have to check that. I don't believe he indicated that they stopped.
So he actually indicated that they pulled over to take a break, and Mr. Milano pulled this thing out of the ukulele case and
yes.
went outside and shot it.
Yes.
So his version was, one could infer that he was surprised to learn that there was a gun in the car. They pull over to go to the bathroom or whatever. Suddenly, Mr. Milano pulls his gun out and goes out and starts shooting. Is that a fair summary?
That is a fair summary.
Okay.
Yes.
And Gonzalez's story is that there was a more evolved sequence of events with the gun being handled, stopping, loading, driving, stopping, bullet counting, and the like. Is that true?
Yes,
okay.
I believe so.
Could the jury have relied on the inconsistencies in those two versions in inferring some guilty knowledge on the part of Mr. Foster that he was trying to minimize his involvement with and knowledge of this gun?
Well, even if that's true, and I guess the jury could have assumed that, whether or not he had knowledge of the firearm is still not sufficient to show the nexus necessary for him
no.
to have the intention.
That he was minimizing his involvement with the firearm, would that support an inference that, in fact, he did have the intent to control it? Could the jury have drawn that inference and properly relied on it?
I don't believe they could have, because again, there's no sufficient nexus to show that he tended to exercise any kind of dominion and control over the firearm. So even if he had knowledge of the firearm being in his vehicle, we're back to, again, is he vicariously liable for anything that's brought into his vehicle?
So coming back to my initial question, if the gun was out in the open when he picked up Mr. Milano in Pugliani, that would not, that standing alone would not support a conviction in your view?
I don't believe it would. But, and again, we don't have that factor in this case. That's not the evidence. So it's even, the state's case against Mr. Foster is even weaker, I would argue.
Do you agree with the prosecution that there was no evidence of any material in the car that could be used to, you know, protect the vehicle from blood of a deer?
Yes. As I indicated earlier, I don't believe there was any evidence regarding deer hunting. I was trying to find it, too, but I couldn't find it. One of the law enforcement officers actually testified that they did not believe this kind of gun would be used in hunting. I'm sorry I couldn't find that particular testimony, but there was at least one law enforcement officer who testified to that.
Do you rely on the Moniz case?
Yes. It's a little...
Is there a little different, but yes. Somewhat similar. Wife,
yes.
She knew about the marijuana. They had joint control
right.
over the drawer.
Right.
She got money from the sale of marijuana, but yet the court said that doesn't show possession.
Right.
It shows presence, it shows knowledge, it shows association
right.
with a person, but not enough to indicate that she had control over the marijuana in their drawer that she shared with her husband.
Right, and I believe it was similar in terms of there are two people who have the right of possession of the room or the drawer, but there was no sufficient nexus. I believe the court found the same thing, that there was no nexus to show that the wife had the intent over the marijuana. She may have had the power, the ability to control it, but there's no evidence to show that she had the intent, and that's what we have here as well. There was some evidence that Mr. Foster had the power, especially with the ammunition, to touch it or handle it, but there was no evidence to show that he intended to use the ammunition, use the rifle, or anything further. Are there any further questions from the court?
It appears that's it. We're done. We thank you very much for the arguments by counsel on both sides, and the court will take this matter under advisement. Thank you.